Chapter 14. The hulking war droid rotated 200 degrees on his waist coupling and pointed the business end of his blaster arm at Raynar Thule.
Plan point 14, Private.
I'm not a private. Raynar was dressed as usual in the colors of his family's merchant house. In this case, scarlet breeches, purple waist sash, and a golden tunic that matched the color of his bristly blonde hair.
We're not in the military.
Point 14, 11A insisted.
Raynar rolled his eyes. The crew bursts into the dining area and gets the drop on the Jedi, he said. Point 15, the Jedi yield their weapons.
Lightsabers, 11A corrected, and I did not ask for point 15, soldier.
I'm not a soldier,
Raynar said wearily. Anakin and the 16 members of his strike team were sitting on the lush, conform couches on the observation deck of Lando Calrissian's private space yacht. Rehearsing the plan Anakin had worked out with Luke, Lando, his father, mother, and about half the Jedi on Eclipse. There were 1,000 little details, but basically, the scheme called for the Lady Luck's crew to surprise the Jedi when the Yuuzhan Vong boarded. As the invaders took their prisoners away, a pair of YVH war droids would slip out of the disposal lock with an equipment pod and attach to the bottom of the enemy boarding shuttle. When the shuttle returned to its mothership, the droids would ride along, concealed from view by the shuttle itself. To make certain the droids went undetected, the strike team would stage a diversion.
Point 32, sir.
Recalling that the droid considered him the group officer, Anakin looked up to find 11A's blaster arm leveled at his face. As usual, staring down the black tunnel of death brought his thoughts into sharp focus.
I used the force to tear open the weapons locker and pass out blasters, Anakin said. The blasters will be stored with power packs disengaged.
This part troubles me, Tenel Ka said. Surely the Yuuzhan Vong will find it too convenient.
Consider the alternative, Lando said, stepping onto the observation deck with them. My crew is all volunteer, but they won't die just to make things look good.
Which only proves her point, Ganner said.
As the oldest Jedi Knight aboard, he would serve as a decoy commander so that Anakin would remain free, or as free as possible, to quietly lead the group.
The Yuuzhan Vong aren't stupid.
No, they're not, which is why I can sell this, Lando said.
Disengaging power packs is a common safety procedure, one that anyone about to betray a shipload of Jedi would certainly take.
This came up in the planning meeting, Anakin said. Dad thought it was a good idea.
Ganner shrugged, then, much to Anakin's relief, nodded. Serving as a decoy leader had been Ganner's own suggestion, and Anakin's biggest worry so far was that the older man would have trouble separating the two roles.
"I have a question," Raynar said.
"Why am I not surprised?"
Jaina muttered.
Lando smiled. "Ask away. You need to be confident in this plan."
"Yuuzhan Vong's ships are alive, right?" he asked. "So how come this one isn't going to feel the droids attaching?"
That would be like a Shenbit feeling something on its shell.
Bellahara rasped.
Armor serves no purpose if one feels pain when it is struck.
These are hulls, not armor, Raynar objected. And if the ships were alive...
They're not alive like that, Jaina said. They have brains, but the brains only control certain functions, like computers do aboard our ships. And they don't have feeling in their hulls. At least none of the ships I've been on did.
They couldn't, Jason said. Feeling requires nerve endings, and nerve endings close enough to feel the exterior of the hull would freeze solid. Imagine standing on Hoth, barefoot. This seemed to convince Raynar. He winced and nodded to Lando.
Thanks. Now I'm confident.
YVH-11A swiveled toward Lobaka.
Point 33, Private.
Lobaka groaned something long and low that Anakin recognized as a crude offer involving a memory wipe. The Wookiee's translation droid, MTD, flitted down in front of him.
Are you sure you want to say that to a war droid, Master Lobaka?
When Lobaka answered with a growl, MTD zipped around behind Tekli and emitted a burst of static that caused 11A's photoreceptors to light. Lando interposed himself between Lobaka and the wardroid. "That's all for now, 11A. Stand down." He shot Lobaka a weary look, then turned to the others. "We've transferred the extra two YVHs and your equipment pod, and Tendra is down on the bridge plotting our route with the crew."
"We're ready," Tahiri said confidently. 11A has seen to that."
Lando's expression grew even more stern. 11A is a droid. He can make you drill in practice, but he can't prepare you. Not for something like this."
"I'm not sure I understand," Ilaha Kor ventured. "Our rehearsals have been flawless. Certainly, we must be ready to improvise. Every good ensemble is. But current projections give us a 72% chance of success."
Anakin did not want to ask about the margin of error. There were still so many unknowns that he suspected the swing could place their chances either above 100% or below 50. Lando sat across from the Bith and stared into her glassy eyes, his own gaze harder and colder than Anakin had ever seen. "What I'm talking about can't be measured." He glanced at the others. "Things are going to go wrong. No matter how many times we rehearse, no matter how well we plan, this isn't going to happen the way we expect. You'll need to react fast."
"No different from any battle," Ganner said.
"This isn't a battle, Rysode. Get that into your head." Lando glared at Ganner until Ganner looked away, then continued to glare some more. "You're not going as warriors. You're going as spies. You'll have to do things that don't sit well inside. You can't balk. You can't even hesitate."
"We won't."
It was Alima Rar who said this, and Anakin knew by the look in her eyes that she, at least, understood exactly what Lando was telling them.
"I won't."
Lando studied the Twi'lek only a moment before nodding. "You've been there, I know." He turned to the others and said, "Watch Alima. She'll do what's necessary, and so should you." "What are you saying?" Jason asked. "That any means justify the ends?"
"He means we have only two concerns," Alima said,
the silkiness of her voice belying the steel of her words.
"The first is to complete our mission. The second is to return alive."
"That way lies the dark side," Jason insisted. "If we have no concern for the methods we use to win our goals, we are no better than the Emperor. Or the Yuuzhan Vong."
"Perhaps so," Alima agreed. "But if the path before us is dark, we dare not shy away. Not for our own sakes, but for the sake of those who will fall if we fail."
"And for Numa and Lusa, and Elissa and everyone else the Voxen have taken already," Raynar added. Alima rewarded his support with a vaguely promising smile.
"Of course, for their sakes most of all."
"No. Vengeance leads to the dark side," Zek said. "I won't be a part of something like that." Everyone started to talk at once, Alima and Raynar arguing that destroying the Voxen and defeating the Yuuzhan Vong would justify any action, Zek telling them they didn't know what they were talking about, Jason insisting it was wrong to put the ends before the means. Though the others seemed to fall somewhere between the two poles, they spoke just as loudly, drawing even Errol Besa and Jovan Drark, an imperturbable Rhodian, into the argument on opposite sides. Only the Barabels, squatting in the corner with their reptilian pupils narrowed to vertical slits, seemed in possession of themselves. Anakin sighed deep inside, then noticed Lando watching him and realized just how wise his mother had been in choosing the arms merchant to ferry them to the enemy. As sincere as Lando's warning about not hesitating might be, there was a hidden agenda behind his words. Knowing the strike team was going to have this argument eventually, he had intentionally provoked it while they could take time to work things through, and now he was waiting for Anakin to solve the problem. "Quiet!" Anakin waited a moment, then tried again, and when that failed, shouted, "Shut up! That's an order!"
His rudeness and the force he used to augment his voice finally got through to the others. Before the argument could resume, he continued, "Nobody is turning to the dark side on this mission." He glared at Reynar and Alima. "Is that clear?"
"I didn't mean to suggest we should," Alima began quietly, "only that we can't shy."
"Is that clear?"
Anakin demanded again. Alima's leku curled at the tips, but she pushed her lip out and said, "Of course, Anakin." Anakin felt more than glimpsed the strange smirk that came to Tahiri's face. While she was not fond of any of the strike team's female Jedi, she seemed to truly dislike Alima. Deciding to puzzle over the matter later, he turned to Reynar and cocked his brow. Reynar nodded.
"Fine. Who'd want to anyway?"
Anakin accepted this and turned to Zack and Jason.
"But Lando's right. We may have to do some things we don't feel good about and do them quickly. If you can't live with that, maybe you should catch a ride home on the freighter."
"What kind of things?" Jason asked. "If we talk about our limits now—"
"Jason," Anakin hissed.
"Can you do this?"
Instead of answering, Jason looked around for support. He found it, of course, especially from Zek and Tennel Ka, but Anakin began to think even his brother's special talent for handling animals might not be worth the discord he would bring to the team. He looked to Lando for guidance, but found only the expressionless face of a seasoned gambler. Anakin would have to solve this problem on his own. Where they were going, there would be no advice from old heroes of the rebellion. Anakin took a deep breath, using a Jedi relaxation technique to clear his mind so he could concentrate. Throughout the Yuuzhan Vong invasion, he and Jason had been drifting apart, until they had reached a point where they had barely been able to speak to each other without an undercurrent of resentment and blame. Those wounds were only now beginning to heal. The last thing Anakin wanted to do was remove his brother from the team and open them again. But he had to think of the mission, and of the others who would be on it. Anakin turned to his brother.
"Jason, maybe—"
"Anakin, I've had a brainstorm."
Though Jaina's tone was enthusiastic, Anakin could feel his sister's agitation through the Force. Nearly as troubled by the schism as the brothers themselves, she had spoken to them both about trying to bridge it.
"You know how we've been worried about the breaking?"
"Yeah?"
Anakin answered cautiously. Everyone on Eclipse knew how much value the Yuuzhan Vong placed on trying to break the will of Jedi prisoners. His biggest concern was that their captors would start it aboard the transfer vessel, and that someone in the group would not be able to endure it long enough to cross the frontier. "What's that have to do with what we're talking about?"
"You remember how we used that telepathic force union during that first Yuuzhan Vong attack at Dubrillion?"
Jaina asked. The three siblings had reached out to each other through the Force to share perceptions.
"What if Jason could help us all do that? We could use the link to bolster each other mentally and emotionally."
"This is a good plan," Tennel Ka said. "Every interrogator knows that mental isolation is key to breaking a victim's resistance."
Anakin saw the potential, just as he saw how desperately his sister was trying to prevent the gulf between him and Jason from widening any farther. Cautiously he asked,
"How can we do that?"
Jaina's expression grew confident.
"I've been talking to Tisar and his hatchmates about the Wild Knight's combat tactics."
She glanced in the Barabel's direction.
"I think we could adapt a couple to our situation."
"Yes, this one thinks we could," Tisar said. "Perhaps we could even use the bond to create a big meld fight."
Anakin raised his brow. Meld fight was what the Barabels had called their incredible display of cohesion during the confused battle at Fraz.
"An interesting possibility."
"But we'd need Jason,"
Jaina pressed. He's the only one with enough empathic power to bind us all together.
Or to drive us apart, Anakin thought. But as he studied the expectant faces watching him, he realized much of the damage had been done already. Sending Jason back now would not only disappoint his sister, it would alienate Zek, Tenel Ka, and many of the others who shared his concerns about the dark side. It would also widen the gulf between the two brothers, and Anakin wanted that about as much as he wanted another Yuuzhan Vong slave seed implanted in his head.
Jason, you have to do what I say when I say it.
Anakin caught his brother's gaze and held it. If something feels wrong, it's on my head, not yours. If you can't live with that, I'm sorry, but you can't come. Having sensed how close Anakin had been to sending him home before, Jason knew better than to hesitate. He nodded and said, I trust your judgment, Anakin. I really do.